Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute and a half past the hour, and we begin this Thorn in the Side Thursday broadcast of the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you wish to, for instance, jump into the multimedia real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Run on over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you've never been there before. And you'll be right in there on you'll be right in there in the midst of the big fun. Yes, indeed. And we are off and running. Good evening, Kathy and Jug of Punch, and of course, good evening to longtime inveterate, veteran, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage field navigator, has folded space to become man cave. More folks along presently. We are on. It is the 15th day of October 2015. We are almost halfway through. You know, it's those 31-day months that create such a problem finding halfway marks for those of us who are ciphering and Gazetta challenge. But, yeah, we're pretty much halfway through the month of October. And, you know, a gentle reminder, we don't have any ads on this program. We don't sell you. We don't have anything to sell you. Nobody ever gets charged for picking up the radio stream. Nobody gets charged for the podcast. And consequently, we rely on the goodwill of listeners to keep this all going. Right. So, with that being the case, like I said, a gentle reminder. The way we keep things going is by your kind contributions also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com under the tab Contribute. That's where you find the interface in which you fill out your name and stuff like that. You don't have to bother figuring out filling in those blanks about who you work for, where you work for, that kind of thing. No. You can leave that blank. It's kind of nosy, but we didn't put that in there in the first place. That was PayPal, and ugh. But yuck. You're really yuck. No, just leave those blank, put in the stuff that's necessary, get to the next page, get to the next screen. That's where you decide if you want to go PayPal or if you want to go MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Discover, and not Diners Club. Hell, I don't even know if we do American Express. Honest to God, I don't look at it that much. But anyway, that's where that happens. If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service for your contribution, and many do, the address of the Horn Echo Chamber is, and let me know if you're going to do it that way. That way I can tell Boss Man Wayne that he can leave the spider-proof gloves at home. The way you do that is checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, but to the Horn. I never see him. That's what Boss Man Wayne does. To the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. Okie doke. So we've got that out of the way. We try to raise $200 every evening. And the fundraising goal for this evening, I wrote it down last night because I'm prone to forget. The fundraising goal for this evening is, wait a minute, more math. Oh, the ciphering, it hurts as us. And there, and that, and let's see. And 11, 25, 6, and that turns that into a 0, and that's a 7. And our fundraising goal, thanks to, our fundraising goal for the evening is 300. That's last night and tonight. $347.06. I know there are some of you out there who are absolutely tickled pink at the prospect of me dealing with that 6 cents. It's kind of like a circus act, isn't it? Yeah. So $347.06, and big thanks going out to Harold. Thank you, Harold. I got a note just before airtime saying, have a show on me, Goodwill Hunting. Thank you, Harold. Thank you very kindly. So that takes us down to $147.06. Yay. And hopefully that will come in short order. That's 10 people at $14.70, or 14.7 people at $10, and damn decimals. Right. But it is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn, and we got an abundance of those things, those thorns, those that happen when you it's a vicarious sort of pain that happens when you watch right wingers try to think. man, it's hard not to start with it. Yeah. No, we're not going to start with him. He doesn't get pride of place. No, pride of place goes to dear old West Virginia, well, you know, almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. Why? Well, and not all of us, but to our our citizens who are friends of Cole. You know, the same people who brought you the Obama war on coal. Yeah, that bunch. Dumber than dirt. Meaner than snakes. Yeah. So what's got the friends of coal? Well, that was almost Granny Kyler, wasn't it? What's got them so in an uproar? Well, this. That one, in our White House, you know, the Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, is a-coming to West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I know. How dare he? What with him being a leader of the war on coal and everything and having done destroyed West Virginia and Appalachia, Stan, by keeping us from mining all the coal that's already gone. Uh-huh, yeah. Oh, mercy sakes, yes. Some big brains on display. Why is President Obama coming to West Virginia? Well, because West Virginia, after many, many efforts, has finally figured out a way to be first in something. Yeah, of course you know it's not a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. We are first in opiate overdoses, deaths. In the whole entire United States of America. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Mm-hmm. American exceptionalism has come to the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. And it has come here in the form of lots of people getting dead. The numbers are quite striking. Dr. Rahul Gupta, who is the head of the West Virginia Board of Public Health, remarked, "The nation, and specifically West Virginia, are undergoing an epidemic of opioid prescription drug abuse and resulting suffering." The overdose rate in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, is 34 deaths per 100,000 people. Compare that with the national average. 13 deaths per 100,000 people. Almost three times as many. Almost three times as likely to die of an overdose in West Virginia than you are in any other state in the union. The nearest state to us is our cross the Big Sandy River rival, Kentucky. Down in Kentucky, they average 25 deaths per 100,000 residents. This is, and it's not just about, and, you know, you take into account the fact that we've got about 1.5 million people, so that's 10 times 100,000, 15 times 100,000. Yeah. Those begin to add up to some real scary numbers pretty quick. Now, nationally, this is interesting, isn't it? Not hearing a lot about this on the campaign trail, I guess. The Charleston Gazette-Mail reports that in the recent past, drug overdoses have become the number one cause of accidental death in the United States. That means that there are more accidental deaths from drug overdoses in the United States than there are from car crashes. That's sobering. All the details have not yet been announced. We don't know exactly what time and where President Obama will arrive. Pretty good guess the where is the airport, if we can keep it from sliding down into the river. Yeah, can't exactly land the 747 version of Air Force One up at Jaeger Airport, so it'll have to be a smaller version of it. Whatever, you know, designation-wise, whatever plane the president is on becomes Air Force One. And so, you know, if you can't bring it, and we know that a small Airbus will land because they do that every day. But no 747, sorry. Mm-mm. Don't think you can even do that at Beckley, and it's got a longer runway. Keith Maley is a White House spokesman. He said, Communities in West Virginia and in states across the country have been developing and implementing responses that involve all sectors of their communities. The president hopes to discuss local, state, and federal efforts, as well as private sector initiatives, with those who are addressing the epidemic on a daily basis. And that, that epidemic has gone from, it's increased 65% from 2007, 2009 to 2011 to 2013. So God only knows where it is in 2011-13 to 2011-15. Those numbers obviously not available as yet, as we are not quite done with 2015. So this is a pretty good reason to come to West Virginia. Now, knowing me and listening to this broadcast, of course, you know there's another very good reason to come to West Virginia. My good friend Jeff Biggers covered that with a post at Huffington Post earlier today. I put it up on my Facebook page. Obama visits West Virginia on coal disaster anniversary. Will he finally recognize Appalachian health emergency? Mm-hmm. Jeff noting President Obama's visit to address the drug epidemic in West Virginia on October 21st falls on the anniversary of a historic coal slurry disaster that symbolizes another Appalachian emergency health crisis, cancer-linked fallout and toxic coal slurry from reckless mountaintop removal operations. And you know what? These two things are not unlinked. The places that are most burnt up with prescription drug abuse and heroin abuse also, oddly enough, happen to be the places that have been used, abused, and thrown aside and abandoned by the coal industry in its relentless, remorseless search for holy profit. In these abandoned, ignored, forgotten areas, it's the same sort of areas of West Virginia where a male has the same life expectancy as a male in Haiti. Areas in West Virginia where a male has a shorter life expectancy than someone working a farm at subsistence levels in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. That's a reality. Drug addiction often travels in the company of hopelessness. And if you want to see hopelessness, and why would you? One need look no further than the toxic moonscapes of West Virginia. Places where the water runs foul and poisonous. Holler communities where everyone, from innocent children to their grandparents and great-grandparents, get to breathe tiny little particles of blasting dust that under a microscope look like jagged hunks of glass and behave just like that on a cellular level. But you know all this. The particles of dust that transit the heart-lung barrier, the particles of dust that travel into the blood-brain barrier, the particles of dust so tiny that they can travel from the mother to her growing child in utero, which is likely why we have the rate of birth defects that we have here. And then there are the people who have worked in the coal industry and, of course, since been cast aside. And they often get cast aside when they get hurt. And when you work in the mining industry, you don't get a little bit hurt. You tend to get great big hurt. And then you file your workers' compensation claim with the workers' compensation privatized insurance company that Joe Manchin put in place after he destroyed a publicly operated workers' compensation system. Because money. And then the coal company goes to court with its legion of lawyers and fights you tooth and nail to make sure that you do not get disability or black lung. You may have seen the story in the recent past about how the coal industry bought themselves a pet doctor or several at Johns Hopkins University. Yes, vaunted Johns Hopkins. The corruption was so bad at that Johns Hopkins unit that that Johns Hopkins recently finally gave up and shut it down. So, that's the backdrop. That's sort of the why and the wherefore of our drug addiction problem. In 2014, 628 people. And understand, 628 people in West Virginia is a small town. 628 people in West Virginia in 2014 died from drug overdoses. The primary causes of those overdoses were heroin and oxycodone. And as a sidelight to this, bear in mind that if you have a legitimate need for pain medication in this state, I mean, if you lop off a leg, you're lucky to get a goddamned aspirin. Pulling out heroin by itself. In West Virginia, there were 34 heroin deaths in 2010. In 2014, there were 165. Now, here's a sentence that just, you know, you'd laugh were this not so grave. The epidemic prompted the White House to announce a new strategy in August, which uses about $13 million to increase access to drug treatment to try to trace, this is the funny part, try to trace the sources of heroin. No, I probably should have issued a hockey puck warning, shouldn't I? Trace the sources of heroin. Like I said, that would be funny as hell if it was not so damned grim. The sources of heroin. Now I'm just a hillbilly with a microphone. But wait a minute. I think I'm cogitating a cogitation. I think I'm formulating a theory. Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for George W. Bush. Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for 2001. No, Sherman, no need to turn on the Richard Strauss, also Sprach Zarathustra music. No, we don't need that. It was 2001, wasn't it? After the attacks of September the 11th, 2001. When we began bombing a country, a benighted country, a beat-up country, a worn-out country called Afghanistan. Remember the old Peace Corps advertisement that used characters? This goes back to the 70s. The old Peace Corps ad that used characters from the BC comic strip? Or the caveman walks up to the rock with the person standing behind it, and it says Peace Corps. And he says, I'll take Manhattan. And the person behind the rock says, you'll take Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Well, we did eventually get around to taking Afghanistan. That Peace Corps ad ran before the former Soviet Union decided to have its little adventure in the grave of empires. Ronnie Reagan gave money to a well-meaning Saudi dude named Osama bin Laden to be a thorn in the side to the Ruskies. And the Mujahideen, was it the Mujahideen or the Contras that Reagan referred to as being analogs to our founding fathers? Oh, I think that was the Contras. The Mujahideen were freedom fighters. Uh-huh. Mujahideen, of course, gave us the Taliban, and more importantly and tragically for the Afghan people, gave them the Taliban, and had great big stadiums full of people watching soccer matches, and at halftime, they'd behead people. But Afghanistan is noteworthy for something else. It just happens to be a lovely place for growing opium poppies. Lots and lots of opium poppies. Poppies will make her sleep. Poppies will make hillbillies die. Mm-hmm. And the poppy production was controlled by these guys that we in English like to refer to as warlords, tribal chieftains. Right? Well, the Taliban did take control of Afghanistan, and by the year 2000, they had done such a magnificent job eradicating poppy production, because if they caught you growing poppies, they would take you to the aforementioned soccer stadium, where you would be the halftime entertainment as you said goodbye as your shoulders said goodbye to your neck. Allahu Akbar, baby. And lo and behold, poppy production, poppy cultivation, and heroin production dramatically decreased. It decreased so much that in the early days of the dim leader presidency, they were so impressed that they gave American taxpayer dollars to the Taliban as a way of saying, thank you for cutting so deeply into the supply of heroin to the United States. It had gotten to the point where you almost never heard of a heroin overdose. Mm-hmm. Oh, but then came September 11th, 2001. Well, let's back up. In, what was it, May 2001, the Bush administration, seeking to get support for a UNICAL pipeline across Afghanistan that would reach the sea in Pakistan. I don't know why I say Afghanistan, but Pakistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan. I'm a hillbilly. Anyway, and in the course of that, if history and facts are to be believed, the Bush administration said to the Afghani Taliban types, we will give you a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. That choice kind of went off the table on September 11th, 2001, because we then demanded the head of Osama bin Laden, and the Taliban leadership of Afghanistan said, well, we're not really in a position to do that. We will be happy to hand him over to an international tribunal at The Hague where he can be properly tried. And the United States said, The Hague? We want him because we want to eat, torture him and eat him and blow him up and burn him and cut him and gouge him and stab him and put him in solitary and make him listen to Barney the goddamn dinosaur for 92 hours a day? And if you don't, we're going to bomb the shit out of you. So we bombed the shit out of them. You remember all this. You were there. I suspect there are no 13-year-olds listening to the program for whom this is going to be news. But we did. We bombed and we bombed and we missiled and we bombed and we hellfired and we bombed and we droned and we bombed and we sent in Marines and we bombed and we shot and we bombed. We AC-130'd and we bombed. We helicopter gunshipped and we bombed. We wasted no small number of wedding parties because at that point in time, well, you know, if you were having a wedding in Afghanistan, there's probably something wrong with you. And you were deadly in need of dying. Mm-hmm. Some of us, you know, sissy peaceniks were out there going, this might not be the way to go. War is seldom the answer. Especially a war of choice, especially a war where you invade somebody else. Defending yourself is one thing, starting it is another. They didn't listen. Why should they? The money was drowning out the peaceniks. But in the wake of the chaos that was caused by all of the bombing and the killing and the bombing and the killing and the burning and the bombing and the raping and the killing and the bombing and the burning, something happened. All that suppressed opiate production, it got kind of unsuppressed. All the warlords who had managed to not have their shoulders say goodbye to their heads, and the ones who were waiting for the other ones to die off anyway, because that's part of the warlord business. You're never really, well, it's like sitting on a sword of thrones, throne of swords, something like that. I don't think there are dragons involved. Maybe there are. But the warlords came back to power, and the best way for them to make a great big heap and load of money was to start growing opium poppies again. And at one point in time, and I can't remember when it was in the last 10 years because it happened during the life of the Horn, there was a story that it had gotten so brazen that the warlords were actually trademarking their opium and trademarking their heroin so that you would know which warlord it came from when it arrived in places like New York and Philly, etc., etc. Meanwhile, the Drug Enforcement Administration was hapless and helpless to stop any of this. I mean, this we're talking about an inflow of heroin that was on a scope, truly a capitalist scope, and the price of heroin went way down. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, back here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, a war had been declared, because that seems to be the only metaphor with which we can work. A war had been declared on prescription pain medications. Because, see, what had happened is things like oxycodone proved to be so very effective that people who used it legitimately to have mitigation of mind-bending, life-crippling pain rapidly became addicted to it. And then there's always those funsters out there who said, what? Wow. Time-release coating, huh? Wonder what happens if I crush that up and snort it for the refreshing burst of flavor. Which they did. So they went after OxyContin. And then it was hydrocodone. And then things like pain clinics rose up. And another word entered the national lexicon, pill mill. Hillbillies would rent a van. And they would all take their scripts for their pills, and they'd all ride in their van down to Florida, where they would go to a pill mill. And they would fill their pills and fill their pill scripts and give a certain number of the pills to the driver and renter of the van in exchange for his or her time and trouble. And the pill problem got worse and worse and worse. Along the way, there was a meth problem. So we cracked down on pills. You know where this goes, right? I mean, this is the, oh my God, we have a snake problem, let's bring in the mongooses. Hey, wait, now we have a mongoose problem. Yeah. So, we cracked down on the pills, and hey, look, heroin's cheap. So suddenly, the hillbillies have a heroin problem, which was ironic because prior to that, OxyContin was being referred to as hillbilly heroin. At which point, some enterprising hillbilly looked up and said, hillbilly heroin, hell, let's get the real stuff! And did. And thus, now, here, in the second half of the second decade of the 21st century, West Virginia, blasted almost beyond recognition in some parts, poisoned, dying, has itself a nice monkey on its back. And it's gotten so bad that even the White House has noticed. Here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, we seldom get noticed for any of the good shit we do. It's because there's so little of it. It's in isolated pockets, individual people and places and groups. Every night you hear me mention, for instance, Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. A tiny group of people that has worked tirelessly for well over a decade, decade and a half, coming up on near 20 years, to open the eyes of not just the state, but the nation and the world to a slow-rolling genocide that's taking place here. President Obama's not coming down to say thank you to Cold River Mountain Watch or any of the other groups that have stood up against mountaintop removal. It would be mighty nice if he would look down upon us as he flies over, because his flight path will take us right, take him right over mountaintop removal country. Be kind of hard to miss. Now, presidents come here when things are awful. Hoping to be president, Bobby Kennedy came here to look at the appalling poverty that tormented the region. The poverty of Appalachia was a driving force behind the Great Society programs of the Lyndon Johnson administration. Now, granted, Dim Leader did develop a taste for coming here to celebrate our heroic coal industry. Yeah. That was back when you could get arrested for even wearing a t-shirt that disagreed with George Bush. It happened. Settling that case cost us many thousands of dollars, but oh well. We didn't need the money anyway. So, yes, President Obama is coming here. And how, you ask, does that fit into Thorn in the Side Thursday? Now, I've talked about mountaintop removal in the context of this story because I really think the destruction of this state has something to do with the degree of hopelessness that attaches to it. Well, suffice to say, the news story, which doesn't say anything about mountaintop removal, the news story at the Gazette Mail just lays out the facts of the trip as they understood them. Oh, but the comments. Oh, the comments. They are choice. Let's take a look real quick. One decent person says, "Welcome, President Obama. Those of us still possessing class and character are honored by at your presence, and thank you for coming to the state to address its population's rapid drug abuse. Members of my very family have fallen victim to this societal problem. It is one of epidemic proportions." And see, we only talked about the deaths. We didn't talk about the people who survive it and have their lives slowly spiral into misery. But anyway, so thank you, welcome. Brandon Boggs follows that up by saying, "People with class have given up on Obama." Richard Meadows says, "This person must be referring to work, or the lack thereof. Since 2009, some people just love living on welfare, thanks to the new Fed-imposed EPA, FDA, CDC, the list goes on and on and on. Some people are just lazy drug addicts and pushers, like their way of life." Instead of this punctuation, not a lot of it. More would be good. "And pushers who like their way of life instead of having a real job. No way he can be of any help for WB after destroying all good-paying jobs we had. Everyone cannot be a lawyer. Everyone cannot be a doctor, and so on, ect." Yes, ect. Everyone cannot know grammar and spelling either, apparently. It takes real hard-working labor people to keep the lights on in this country. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Now you know why I do that, don't you? WV was number one in production of power. Now it is number one in drug abuse since 2009. Connect the dots. No jobs, no reason to look ahead. Yeah. And Karen Rutherford says, ask him why he shut down the coal industry. Ask him why he is allowing thousands of illegal aliens free homes and health care, social security and welfare, while your state is starving. This sounds like a T-Rump follower who is not a West Virginian. Suffice to say, I couldn't resist. Yeah, Zong! Ask him why he ain't got them little Keebler coal elves of mine and more coal under the ground since we done dug all ours up. Ask him! I'm all wore out with the stupid here. I really am. I'm worn out with the stupid everywhere, but I'm particularly worn out with it here. Chuck Anzalevich, a journalist here in West Virginia, said, every single red pickup truck that has a big Confederate flag flying off the back, and there are a lot in the Charleston area, will be converging on this event just to express hatred. And oh, our buddy Brandon Boggs from up above, you remember Brandon, don't you? People with class have given up on Obama. That Brandon Boggs said, well, okay, and again, Chuck Lanzler said all the rednecks with their Confederate flags will be just to express hatred. And Brandon Boggs said, I hope so, and they would be justified. You, in the meantime, can bring your weak gay flag. Yeah, we don't, we're not going to save the vitriol for, you know, that one in our White House. We're gonna, because you know he likes the homos. That one in our White House does, the Kenyan Muslim, you slurper. And so a Confederate flag is always better. Is always better than your weak gay flag. Mm-hmm. What does that even mean? Weak gay flag. I don't know. But the fiends of coal are out in force, and they'll probably be rallying and carrying their go back to Kenya signs and that sort of stuff. Yeah. Patty Justice says, sure he get to dodge the real question. Why did he treat the state of WV like a red-headed stepchild and shut down our state of jobs from coal? Is he going to make house payments, car payments, feed our children, and stop S hoops from closing because of no severance taxes from coal? He needs to take responsibility for the damage he and his EPA have inflicted upon the stare of WV and its people. Instead, make us all look like drug addicts. That's my question. Bet it won't be asked. Question mark, question mark, question mark. I can come and ask him myself if no one else can. Dot, dot, dot. Just let me know. Oh, do please, Patty Justice, do please. Jeff Payne, meanwhile, responds and says, "It won't do any good. Only the users can fix that problem. He knows that all he wants to do is see how many more mines and power plants he can shut down and try to force Obamacare on people and try to get people to side with him on gun control. That's gun control with an E. That's why he's really coming to WV, not because of the drug ODs." Not a capitalized, he capitalized it, and I think that's because Facebook makes you, but after that, not a single capitalization, and the only piece of punctuation was an apostrophe between D and S in ODs. Whew. Ronald Paulson says, "I like to go see him, dot, dot, see if he's as dumb," that would be D-U-M, "in person as he acts on TV." Obama, Fort Sharon Murphy, forced the closure of coal-fired power plants with his EPA policies, which is a direct link to the reduction in thermal coal sales. He is responsible for the thousands of good-paying jobs that have been lost in WV. Poverty and drug abuse goes hand in hand. The liberals who are against, A-G-A-I-N-T, coal, enjoy your upcoming electricity bills that will soon triple. Sharon? The power bills already have tripled. Mm-hmm. You know why they did? Because the dumbasses at Appalachian Power bought coal when it was extremely expensive and then got to pass the expenses off onto, you know, us. Thanks, Obama! Where's Gerald when I need him? Mike Holbrook says, "Libtards will welcome him with open arms in the hopes to get more free stuff. This after he fulfilled his campaign promise to bankrupt the coal industry." All caps. Go figure! Gary Bryant, attempting to be succinct, merely says, "That proves how stupid he is." We are left to discern, divine for ourselves what that is. Charles Collins Jr. has been watching Fox. "Nobody on here has mentioned the 6,000 federal prisoners, mostly drug dealers, being released at the end of this month. Keeping drug dealers in jail would be a good start." What's next month? Oh, November. Yeah. Arthur reminds us that gun control goes well with tamale and beery. So the Fiends of Coal, otherwise known as the Fockers, will be out in force, I have no doubt. And once again, no one has to make us look stupid. We'll do it ourselves. Is it as embarrassing as where you are? Probably not. Unless you live in an extraction zone. God Almighty. But I'm a little nervous, I admit. Next month's November. We have this little anniversary every November that no one likes to think about, and yet it's hard not to. Maybe in 100 years or so we'll forget, kind of like the way we've forgotten the date of the Alamo. But we remember in November. We do. And this state, I'll just say it straight up. I hope to goodness the Secret Service brings their A game. Because not only are the people in this state racists, not only are they bigots, not only are they homophobes, and bear in mind they're all of that in the name of Jesus, they're awfully good shots. Devin notes, you know, I've seen a shitload of the Friend of Cole vanity plates lately here. Puke. Emoticon. West Virginia, almost heaven, nearly hell. But I'm serious. Over the past 7 years or so, the coal industry has whipped its Otne Ute Itbre membership, for want of a better term, into a white, and I do mean white, hot frenzy. People who know history might remember what a fever pitch Dallas was at in 1963, late 1963. West Virginia's that way now. Agent Fred, I hope you understand. I'm not advocating anything. I want the man to be protected. But I would say out of a population of about 1.5 million, an easy million of them or more would dance in the streets if Barack Obama were to shuffle off this mortal coil. By whatever means. I trust the Secret Service are good at what they do. After all, they've spent 7 years protecting a president who has had more threats on his life than several presidents of recent note combined. And of course, there is, I would be remiss if I didn't note that there's not a lot to be learned by sitting in a conference room with a bunch of policy wonks who really don't much understand. The causes behind this problem. If the response to this problem is to put more people in jail, and bear in mind, I mean, okay, I will talk about some of the good things that have happened. We now have needle exchanges in Huntington and Charleston because they are so desperately needed. EMS crews now carry naloxone, which can save a person from an overdose death. We're lagging way behind on anything in the way of real treatment for addiction. And I don't think $13 million is enough to even get that underway. Because of the, of course, then you also have to take into account the fact that treatment for addiction would involve, if it was to be meaningful, it would involve, well, real treatment. Not whatever sort of de minimis thing can be offered up as a means of providing a profit to some corporate entity. You know what I mean? So, welcome, President Obama. I hope you can do some good. But if you're going to do any good, we're going to have to address root causes. So let's take a break. Remember, we have $147.06 to go in fundraising this evening. $147.06. Your help is the only help we get. Otherwise, we'd be going to break and, you know, playing you some ads for vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls off of mattresses with foam in them designed by NASA, where just inches away a person is lounging while waiting for the herbal hair growth tonic to work and the herbal erection pill to take effect and listening to the dulcet tones of Rush Limbaugh on his Bose Wave radio inside his general steel building that is floored with flooring from Lumber Liquidators. It being Thursday, the 15th day of October and everything, the Green News Report is next with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. You know the numbers, right? 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. That's the stress line. Light them up if you want. We'll engage in conversation. Plus, well, this is a rose that has a lot more thorns on it this evening. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported and independent as hell. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Cold trains run through our veins, moving monuments to better days. That mountain stands over our darkened lungs. It's time to ponder what we've become. In his company town, it's what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town. Well-dressed Yankee bosses worked us so hard for their well-dressed children and their well-kept yards. While coal camps echoed with the mournful sounds of impoverished voices from deep in the ground. Under this company town is what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town. Our parents' memories of World War II. Minds were drowned, the clock was the American thing to do. Families gathered round their radios to hear FDR say we'd make it somehow in our town. Jobless faces and their grim plight, while four men and a drag line blow the mountaintop off to take its heart out. Now it knows what we've lost. In this company town, it's what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town. Until the life's all drained out of the company town.
I have put forward a plan.
I've put forward specific plans.
How are we going to solve energy problems here?
I've worked hard for climate change.
The planet, the future of the planet is at stake.
Green News Report special coverage. Finally, climate change in the spotlight in a presidential debate.
Impossible. All of that special coverage and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I'm a strong proponent of nuclear power. It is safe. It is clean.
Oh, former senator turned Democratic presidential candidate Jim Webb, you would make an excellent Republican presidential candidate. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it finally happened. A presidential debate where an actual question was asked about climate change.
I know, finally.
And it had to come from a Facebook video. CNN actually had to turn to some random citizen to ask the question.
As presidential candidate, what will you do to address climate change?
So I guess one of the 17 reporters they had at the event couldn't say to the candidates, What are you going to do about climate change?
Yes, five official candidates for the 2016 Democratic presidential nomination squared off in Las Vegas for their first debate this week. And for the first time, climate change actually got its own question. Unlike the Republican crop of candidates, all of the Democratic candidates say they accept climate science, but they do differ on how to solve it. As you said, former Virginia Senator and Republican-turned-Democrat Jim Webb focused on nuclear energy, and he seemed to cast doubt on whether China will actually follow through with its historic emissions agreement signed with President Obama recently.
We need to solve this in a global way. It's a global problem, and I have been very strong on doing that. The so-called agreements that we have had with China are illusory in terms of the immediate requirements of the Chinese government itself.
Now, that seems to me to be just utter nonsense. These agreements are illusory. Is he right?
He does seem to be suggesting that China can't be trusted, but hey, they are the world leader right now in clean energy, and they're launching the world's largest cap and trade system, so I don't think he is right about that. Lincoln Chafee, a former liberal Republican senator.
Another Republican turned Democrat.
Yes, he was an independent governor of Rhode Island, and now he's a Democrat. He highlighted his work on cap and trade legislation while he was in the U.S. Senate. When asked which enemy he is proud of making in politics, he said,
I guess the coal lobby in my time in the Senate tried to bring them to the table so that we could address carbon dioxide. I'm proud to be at odds with the coal lobby.
Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton reiterated her position that action on climate change is actually an economic opportunity.
I've put forward specific plans about how we're going to create more good-paying jobs by investing in infrastructure and clean energy, by making it possible once again to invest in science and research, and taking the opportunity posed by climate change to grow our economy.
Clinton has often said that she believes that the U.S. should become the world's clean energy superpower. She says that she will expand on President Obama's climate policies, like the Clean Power Plan, but her policy, according to 350.org founder Bill McKibben, is, quote, only halfway there because she stops short of calling for a price on carbon. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders highlighted his carbon tax legislation in the Senate, and he added in some campaign finance reform for good measure.
We introduced the first piece of climate change legislation which called for a tax on carbon. And let me also tell you that nothing is going to happen unless we are prepared to deal with campaign finance reform, because the fossil fuel industry is funding the Republican Party, which denies the reality of climate change. This is a moral issue. We have got to be extremely aggressive. The planet,
Thank
the
you,
future
Senator.
Of the planet is at stake.
Senator Sanders also raised the hackles of Rush Limbaugh and the Republican Party with his response to the question of what is the greatest threat that our nation now faces.
The scientific community is telling us if we do not address the global crisis of climate change, transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to sustainable energy, the planet that we're going to be leaving our kids and our grandchildren may well not be habitable.
Former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley gave the most specific proposal of the debate to deal with climate change. He compared the effort to the national effort to put a man on the moon.
Mr. President, I intend to sign as my very first order in office an order that moves us as a nation and dedicates our resources to solving this problem and moving us to a 100% clean electric grid by 2050.
100% clean electric grid by 2050.
It would be quite a challenge, but it is doable, and his plan is very specific with market incentives for renewable energy deployment, for green buildings, for infrastructure. All of this is, frankly, a very stark contrast to the Republican Party candidates. They still mostly deny mainstream climate science to varying degrees. They also obstruct and delay action, and the corporate media is happy to let them go unchallenged.
It is, frankly, obscene that the corporate media hasn't asked more of both Republicans and Democrats on this particular issue.
Indeed.
For much more on this story and all of the ones we couldn't get to, thanks to CNN bothering to ask about climate change, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Special Report.
All righty, 14 minutes past the hour. We're nearly halfway through this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, and I'm running over to the phones in just a second, but a couple of quick things. There's a challenge on the table. You know, I told you that we are $147.06 away from done with fundraising for the evening. And so, Ron, in the unfrozen north, has put a challenge on the table of, well, it was some of them Canadian monies. A challenge on the table. He will match the next $64.36 in Canadian money that comes in. For those of you who don't want to fool with the conversion and the cipherins and the gazettas, that, well, I did it for you. That would be $48.76. So the next $48.76 that comes in, Ron will double. And that will take us down somewhere around $50 to go for to get even with the fundraising. Okay? Okay. And hey, look over on the Skype line. It's Tom from FYI Nation. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Bob. Oh, you hit a nerve with me. This is I talk about this on Sumsay all the time. Our nation and how we don't deal with the drug issue on a responsible, reasonable manner. And it really hits a nerve with me. As someone who has an addictive personality and has seen people who are close friends go through this, and how the Republicans demonize it and take money for it. It really angers me. Like, I'm almost to the point where I'm shaking. I'm so angry because we don't recognize that we have a problem. We don't, as a country, recognize we have a serious drug problem because of unemployment, because of poverty, because of desperation, and it goes from not marijuana. That's not the drug problem. The drug problem is prescription drugs to heroin to cocaine.
Right, and so every resource that we devote toward cannabis interdiction,
yes,
is another dollar that we're not using addressing the real problem. And of course, the second part of what you bring up, though, Tom, if I may, is that it is not a problem that is solved by prison bars.
Amen. Amen. It drives me nuts that we see countries like Denmark and Sweden.
Now, wait. Stop. I got to stop you there. We are not Denmark.
Yes, we are, in Hillary's laugh. We can be. We should be. If we want a happy country, if we don't want a nation of zombie robots, we should be. But that's what they want because that's how we're controlled. You know, I feel all Alex Jonesy here. But
No, that's Alex Jones.
Yes. My voice is too high for that, but thank you.
You'd probably strain something if you tried to. Believe me, I can only do that a couple of times a program.
Right, but it makes me so angry with an addictive personality. I have family who's struggled with alcoholism. Why, when alcohol is more of a gateway drug to harder drugs than marijuana ever is, period. And it really burns my britches when these right wing whack jobs are able. You know, we elected a president with a DUI. Right?
Are you kidding? We elected. Well, we didn't really elect him, now, did we?
We selected.
Yeah, the Supreme Court handed us a president with a Coke Jones that would have made Dr. Thompson blush.
Yeah, he could have easily worked on Wall Street. I mean, nobody wants to talk about that because that, you know, you're un-American. Well, we need to be more American. And talk about this issue and, you know, really be honest. And this is why I'm so glad you're on FYI Nation, because you're being honest with the audience. You're being so brutally, painfully honest, even when you talk about President Obama with the threats he's had. And that, I'm sorry with my French here, that asswipe Donald T. Rump. And his want for security, I'm more worried, frankly, about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton than I am about that jackass who can afford to pay for his own security. you know, and it just angers me to no end. But thank you for touching on this tonight and lighting a fire under my butt.
Well, no thanks needed. It probably would not have popped onto the radar were it not directly affected to my poor, beaten, bedraggled, used, abused, cast aside, almost level west by cold Virginia stand. But it is a horrible problem. You know, you're not in West Virginia, Tom. You're nowhere near West Virginia.
No, but
when you hear a number that, you know, the death rate per 100,000 for opiate drug overdoses is 13 per 100,000 in the United States, and West Virginia's is 64. I mean, did that kind of put you back in your chair a little bit? Tom?
It goes back to the systemic. I was back in my chair again. I was flailing a little bit. It goes back to the issues of why there's a systemic problem. The unemployment issue, the fact that we don't even recognize we have a problem. We don't even, you're one of the few people that I hear talk about this, other than myself, not to my own horn. But it angers me, and I wish more people would talk about it. And the first step to recovery is admitting we have a problem as a nation, or a nation of drug addicts.
Well, I come at it from kind of a different place. You know, I have gut problems. I was born with a birth defect. My innards are backwards. My large intestine is literally backwards. The rest of me isn't, but that is. And so a number of problems have come over the years. Some of it has to do with my hillbilly diet and things like that. But when it flares up, when it goes south, it hurts like hell. I mean, it is debilitating, can't get behind the microphone, can't do anything but sort of lay there and go, kind of pain. And because of the drug problem that this state has, and here's the funny part. The best treatment for when that happens is for me to not eat food for about a month.
Oh my God.
And the way that the way that it works, when this first fired up, the problems here in West Virginia weren't as bad as they are now. They handed me a bottle full of opiates and said, stay off the air for about 2 weeks, don't eat any food, take these painkillers and drink water. Because one of the side effects of opiates is they also shut down the motility of the gut. But by the same token, I stayed away from the microphone for like 2 weeks because I made a promise when I started this 10 years or more ago that I would never do Limbaugh radio. So, you know, I won't get behind the microphone sideways or altered or twisted or whatever. And so I lost like 30 pounds in 2 weeks. And took those pain pills. Now, I didn't get addicted. I didn't start chewing them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. They did what they were supposed to do. They eliminated the pain. They made it possible to rest and heal. Because they have a legitimate purpose. But because of the abuse levels that take place in this state now, as I mentioned earlier in the program, you can walk into an emergency room with a dangling goddamn limb. And they'll say, well, you should probably take you some Motrin.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
Because you can't, the people who legitimately need them can't get them now. And if you ask for them, well, that's a sure sign that you're an addict.
Yeah, here's the thing, when I say we're a nation of drug addicts, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic or like a huckster, you know? I'm trying to wake everybody up, because once you admit you have a problem, you can start to resolve it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we need to admit this country has a problem. Otherwise, more people will die.
Yeah, but see, Tom, if you mention that the country has a problem, you have to talk about why we have a problem. And the reason that we have the problem that we have, especially relative to heroin, is because we turned loose a whole shitload of freedom in Afghanistan.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, who was it? George Santayana said, "Those who do not learn history are doomed to repeat it." Well, I'm one of those people who knows not a lot, but a little bit of history. And so I know about these things called the Opium Wars. And there was something called the Boxer Rebellion in China. And most people don't know that the reason that conflict took place was because the British were hell-bent on maintaining the opium trade out of China. When the Chinese were saying, you know, we need to get a handle on this. And that's why that happened.
Yeah, yeah, and the thing is, I'm not saying that everybody has a problem. I'm saying that we need to admit that a lot of people do, and here are the reasons why to fix the problem.
Right.
You know, because you didn't get addicted. Amazingly, my tolerance is so low for drugs because of my birth problem. I had congenital heart failure, so my tolerance is awfully low because I'm so afraid I would get addicted. Right? So I don't even like taking a leave unless I absolutely feel I have to. So I do it that way to keep myself from being addicted. But not everybody has that level of tolerance.
Well, no, they scare me to death.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. But the funny thing is, when it was time to quit them, I didn't. And maybe it's because the pain was real. I didn't Jones. I mean, I've since found out that I've got two, if not three, absolutely destroyed discs in my neck. My neck is as big a mess as Peyton Manning's was before he had the surgery. And even with that, I'm like, nah, I'll just try to grit my teeth.
Yeah, I'm the same way with my back. I totally understand where you're coming from. My back is the Hunchback of Notre Dame. So, as much as I don't like going outside because of it, I'll deal with it before I'll go under the knife or anything else, because that scares me more than going outside.
Well, I mean, the surgeon looked at me and said, listen, and he described it. I said, oh, you're talking Peyton Manning. He said, I'm talking exactly Peyton Manning. And he said, but the fact is, the chance that this would relieve the problem is about 50-50. He said, when it gets to the point where you look like you're 12, when you look like you're 12 beers out of a 12-pack in, and you're walking into walls, and you've lost your balance, then it's time to operate. Until then, deal with it.
Yeah, Jesus, I know that pain. It's like, I try not to have friends who have chronic pain and stuff and deal with it on a regular basis. So I try not to bitch about mine, even though I deal with mine on a regular basis. And it's like, people who don't have chronic pain think you're, faking it, or think you're, if you mention it, or think you're trying to get out of something. That's another problem too. People have to recognize that, like people with lupus, who our dear friend Nikki has, not everybody can do what they want to do with that disease, and it's one of the most unaware diseases that's there. And it's, we need to recognize that not everybody's pain is exactly the same, and that we need to, as a nation, also be more compassionate without the conservatism, maybe.
Hey, you know what? Yeah, that's very well said. The compassion without the conservatism. Because you know what compassionate conservatism is? It's the equivalent of all deliberate speed.
Yeah.
It's negative two added to positive two, and you get to zero in a hurry.
Yeah, And you can be like, Shkreli, did you see this yet? We're talking about drugs, so this works perfectly. I call him Mr. Shithead on my show. The CEO of Turin Pharmaceuticals gave $2,700 to the Sanders campaign, and they gave it to the Whitman Walker Health Clinic. They said, we're not, here's a direct quote from Ross Dari, we are not keeping the money from this poster boy for drug company greed. More candidates need to be like that. Hillary Clinton needs to be like that. You know? Not that she took money from him, but she's taking money from Big Pharma, I'm sure.
What? If you're taking money from Wall Street, I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. You can only go two doors down.
Right? Well, I'll tell you what. I'm getting some. You know, I just mention every so often that you know, that quote from the other night. I was the senator from Wall Street, and you know here, Tom, we worship no deities, but we do occasionally go out at midnight and sacrifice a rubber chicken or a whoopee cushion to the goddess of irony. And that was just that moment in the debate where the godless of irony just reached down and tweaked Hillary's little nose and made her say, I was the senator from Wall Street, and I told him to cut it out.
And she was proud of
it. And that was 2007, and the crash came in 2008, and obviously they didn't cut it out.
Or that they did by her standards.
Well, who was the great radio comedian? Was it Jack Benny? Who was it? Now cut that out.
Yes, yeah, and just, oh my God, my hamster crashed into the wall when she said that, because we were doing the debates on FYI Nation, and it was just an amazing moment of like, are you kidding? Are you kidding? And I just, Bob, I got, anybody else who hasn't called into your show needs to, because you are fun to talk to, and you calm me down. From a shaking moment to, and I didn't even need any medication to do it.
Well, I was just checking the Twitter feed, and Nikki wants to know when the 10th anniversary of the horn is. That is October the 24th, and oddly enough, that falls on a Saturday this year.
Are you going to celebrate on Friday?
Yeah, and or maybe Monday. I don't know which, but yeah, we're definitely going to celebrate.
You know, since it's 10, you should do 5 and 5. So do Friday and do Monday.
Well, there we go. And by the way, we got a tweet in from Jules, and I'm trusting that this is positive and not negative. Woo woo. Not everyone on prescription pain meds have a drug problem. Well, that's true. I mean, it just is.
Yeah, and we have actually another one, too, from Joe Mar. Once we start talking, our hashtag FYILive picks up. I don't know. My voice is like a dog whistle. I can't help it. I'm sorry, Bob.
Well, I got to admit, Tom, you've shattered a couple of glasses here.
That's okay. I do the same thing in my house all the time. My dog's ears perk up when I start screaming. It's a horrible state. Joe Moore says 80% of heroin addiction in this country started with prescription pain medication.
Right, because you know? Once you can't, and see, that's the we have a snake problem, let's get some mongooses. Because once we made it harder for people to get their pills in a place like Central Appalachia, well, hey, look, there's this guy down the street from Detroit. I just met him the other day, and he says he's got this stuff called Smack, and it's real cheap, and they done brung it all. Well, Marvelline, they done brung it all the way from Afghanistan. Ta-da!
For the Detroit reference, but that's okay. But yeah, no, you're absolutely
well,
right.
No. I mean, that's our connection. See, we've got out of the Charleston airport, we've got twice a day flights to Detroit and twice a day flights to Hotlanta.
Ah, okay.
Especially down in Huntington, down by the river, down by Kentucky. You've got a huge, and what they do is they bring us the drugs, and they sell the drugs to make money, and then they get a willing hillbilly to walk into a local gun emporium, and they buy lots of guns.
Yeah.
And then they rent a car and they drive back to Detroit with all the fun guns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Freedom. See?
But what I will do is I'm going, my birthday is on Monday and I'm going to get to see the girlfriend in Detroit. I will hopefully not get shot doing this.
Well, tell her to cut that out.
Yes, I will tell, well, not her, but them. I will tell, I'll just scream it at the top of my lungs and break some more glasses. And I'm sure I won't get shot while doing it. And I'm sure they'll stop it right away.
Yeah, and one other thing. Did you ever notice that every time we go and get ourselves embroiled in a war we have no business in, we wind up bringing back something fun and awful as a result?
Yes.
There was no small amount of heroin that came to the United States after we decided to go and see Vietnam for a while, and we liked it so much that 55,000 service personnel decided to die there. And we got some, and then so there was that, and then lo and behold, we go over and have ourselves a little adventure in Afghanistan, and more heroin.
Yeah, it's almost like a plot by the CIA.
I kind of wonder if the CIA's flying this shit in,
right?
Not that I'm all paranoid or anything, but it wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, right. It'd probably.
We decided to have an adventure in Central America. Boom, crack.
Yep.
You know, it's like Robin Williams once said about cocaine. He said, the Incas said, you take our land, we give you monkey for your back.
Wow. I missed that man, by the way. Thanks for that.
Yeah, cocaine is God's way of telling you make too much money.
Yeah. Yes. Or you're not poor, or you're too poor to have any. Either way, it divides the rich and the poor. Bob, thank you for having me in your house.
Oh, y'all just stop on by any time. We're just always out here by the back fence, hanging out the laundry and talking and carrying on and shit, and you know, taking a pull off the jug from time to time.
Thank you so much, and happy anniversary.
Well, thank you very kindly. We're not there yet.
Well, close enough. In case I can't call in, happy anniversary just the same.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. From FYINation.com, that's our buddy Doubting Tom. He's at Doubting Tom, FYI. Let me make sure. I want to get that right. Yeah, at Doubting Tom, FYI, on Twitter. And there's FYI Nation on Facebook as well. Hi, FYI Nation folks. Hi. Arthur in the chat room pointing out, you know, there should be a limit of guns over time, say a 5-gun limit per customer for every 3 months. Like they do with the ephedrine drugs, which lead to meth. Yeah, but see, we're talking about your freedom there. I mean, if we had a gun limit in West Virginia, why, we wouldn't be the greatest heroin addicted state on America now, today, forever, or something. And a note coming from Roger, our buddy Roger, out in Oregon. He says, there's no need to connect any dots, Bob. There's a pretty straight line between facilitating the increased availability of cheap heroin in the states and the always a new good rationale for keeping troops or State Department highly compensated mercenaries and all the transport planes moving back and forth with supplies, etc., for another year or so. By the way, we're not leaving Afghanistan. Did you catch that little news story? I did. Apparently, no one thought to terminate the pregnant possibilities from the undocumented union of Iran, didn't you, Contra, and America. Well put. Gestated to full bloom of gesticulating gesticular cancers. Wow. Got knocked off again, Roger says, just like last night. Takes my system about an hour to run the spyware scan, which then usually tells me there's no there, so I end up listening to the recording later. I hope you're still there, Roger. Roger says, it's back doing the green news now. That was a while back. So I think I'll try to stay on for now. I hope you were successful, Roger. And, yes, do please to recall there is a $48.76 challenge on the table, one and all. And that courtesy of Ron in the Thanks Climate Change Not Frozen North. If he doubles the next $48.76 that comes in, we'll have about $50 left to go. Okay? Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the drug problem till hell freezes over. But, you know, we're never going to talk about capitalism and the drug problem.
I mean, an old, decrepit, worn-out, tired Jimmy Connors. No, not Jimmy Connors. John McEnroe. John McEnroe. Toenail fungus? Are you kidding me? With little animated toenails batting tennis balls back and forth across a net. Mm-hmm. And Annette doesn't like it when they do that to her. Bat the tennis balls. Sorry, couldn't resist. And now there's another toenail fungus medicine that shows people at the beach hiding their toes in the sand because someone's going to walk by and go, "Dear God, what's wrong with you? You sickening, disgusting social pariah! Look at your toenail fungus!" Are you depressed? Can you not get a stiffy, guys? Are your toenails falling right the off? Ask your doctor about our newest prescription medication, the side effects, one of which may be sudden imminent death. See if Fuck It All is right for you. Yeah. Hey, let's go over and, let's go over to the, go over to the stress line and talk to Jim. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know?
I'm doing all right. I like to call on the stress line in honor of the great stress. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But
gone but not forgotten. Gone but not forgotten.
But what your previous caller was talking about, they were saying that they were having back trouble and they wanted to give him back surgery.
Yeah.
My dad had four or five back surgeries in it. It never really seemed to solve anything.
And like the surgeon told me, 50-50 chance. And that was a 50-50 chance. You might get a little bit better, and nothing may change at all, and then the other 50% is, and I realize there's a math problem there, the other 50% is it's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not lying. I don't remember how many surgeries he had, and he suffered with his back, I don't know, since he was around 50 on. And, the sciatic nerve and all that. And, none of the surgeries really seemed to help him. In fact, my mother a couple of years ago, maybe, you're at that age too, where a couple of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, they wanted to do surgery on her back, and she saw she just remembered what my dad looked at, and she's like, no. Just deal, But that back surgery is like, and then, they get the pain medications, but then that costs a lot of money to do that, and then you're in some sort of, Rush Limbaugh, Oxycontin state, or some sort of painkiller, once you start going down that road, it can get, and I totally understand what she's talking about, how she doesn't want to go down that road, and then the Oxycontin, how long has Oxycontin been out?
Oh,
20 years?
I know it's been out since the turn of the century.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not that long.
I knew people who were on it in the late 90s for things like back problems. Persistent back pain.
If I had a situation where I had to have back surgery, I would like to do everything not to have the back surgery. Just see what my dad went through. Because once you start cutting into the back, and there's so many nerves back there, I think it was the sciatic nerve, which gave my dad so much trouble, and stuff, and, that started when I was like 10 or 11, I think, and, I'm telling you, once you start dealing with it, and I forgot when he had his first surgery, but he never seemed to solve anything. It would always be another problem to come up with it. You know what I mean?
Well, and the thing is, when we talk about the human spine, Jim, you have to talk about evolutionary processes. You know who never gets a bad back? Gorillas never get a bad back. You know why?
They bend over.
They don't walk upright all the time. Walking upright is for a primate like us is a compromise. It allowed certain things, it's evolution. That's why that famous thing is out there with the four-legged creature and then knuckle walking and then walking upright. Was that Da Vinci? I don't know. Those five drawings, you know. But in walking upright, it allowed certain things in terms of human evolution, but it also came at a cost. And that cost happens in our backs and our hips.
Well, I don't know, because when you said that, it reminded me of a joke I saw in Playboy, 4 decades ago, even longer, about, it's like one monkey saying to another, or ape saying to another, if you walk upright, you can do more things, you can create more. And then the next picture is the ape just keep walking, that's over. God, take a pass on that, you can take on that what you want, but maybe quote unquote civilization of that style wasn't exactly what that ape wanted. I mean, look what we're doing to the planet as we walk up our feet. I could definitely identify with anybody, Unfortunately, so far, I've had no trouble with my back. And, I don't even know. I've had not oxycodone, oxycodone. I've had.
Well, oxycodone, hydrocodone, yeah.
And that wasn't that much, but, I didn't have any.
Well, the reason, taken as directed, as the ads say. The reason it worked, the reason Oxy worked so well, is because it was time released. So you didn't get that big rush of "oh, dude," and then you were hurting, and you had to wait, and then you had to, and then you wait for the stuff to kick in again. Because it was time released, it kept you at a, it kept you at kind of an even keel.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you got the guys out there who said, "I wonder what would happen if we crushed this up."
Yeah, when he snorted.
Burst of flavor, right.
Yeah.
Chew it up for the refreshing burst of flavor, whatever.
I mean, I actually, just between you and me, I know just me on the phone line, but I actually did opium.
It was a long time ago, Agent Fred, and the statute of limitations is obviously run, so pay no mind.
Yeah, three, couple of decades ago, like 3 years ago. And it was really great. And I could see how, because it was like, the only way I can explain it is kind of like a dream within a dream. That's all I kind of remember. And it was, I didn't even smoke it because the pipe broke and the monkey choked and so what we ended up doing was eating it. And, it was just like real smooth. I mean, I could see how that, and if oxycodone's anything like that, I could see how people could start taking it and then, I guess I'm going to advertise this for all you can. But, I can see how you could get addicted to it. But you know, I just, hopefully I don't hurt my back, so far I'm on a roll, and, although, I mean, I notice when I stand on my feet, which I do a lot at work, you know, I feel it after standing in concrete, because basically even a tiled floor, even a carpeted floor, you're standing on your feet,
yeah,
and under it is cement, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
After 6-8 hours, right?
Right. And anybody who has a kind of stand on your feet kind of thing is going to deal with that sooner or later. Everybody from, oh, I don't know, retired brain surgeons to auto assembly line workers.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, that's the thing about these goddamn, pardon the French, motherfucking asshole Republicans wanting to raise the retirement age to 70. I mean,
that whole dodge is premised on a lie. The, well, we are living longer now, which is absolute crap. If you factor in the people who aren't living longer now, you know, I mentioned earlier in the program the guy, you know, the average lifespan of a man in Mingo County, West Virginia, is equal to that of a guy in Haiti. Well, it didn't used to be that way. It used to be significantly different. It used to be significantly longer. But, you know, thanks in large part to fine people like the coal industry, it's now at the level of Haiti.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like that. It's what they do. I mean, you'll have some sort of savings plan, and then all of a sudden it's not there. I'm getting off on a tangent, so I'm going to let you go. But I just wanted to let you know that I see what back spells can be. You know, my mom, she still suffers with it, but in, I don't know, it was 15, 20 years ago where they kind of wanted to do surgery, and that's what my dad went to. She's like, no. You know, and she's in her 80s, and, well, you know, she's 80, and she's still mobile, you know. She's not mobile like she was when she was 25, but, and also the thing is, exercise will help you, even though it hurts, you know.
Oh, yeah. Whatever you can do, you should.
Yeah. So that's right. Yeah.
I keep trying to figure out a way to clear enough space in this wee tiny little space where I broadcast to put in a treadmill or an exercise bike or something, just so I can get on there. And because, you know, you can get out and walk around and do some stuff in the good weather months here, but, man, when the hard stuff comes, you ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, and then another thing real quick. Marijuana. I'm going to start, that's still a mission of mine. Let's just get that stuff decriminalized. I think that could take a lot of the need for these oxycodone, oxycontin stuff away.
Legalize, yeah, it's real simple. Legalize it.
Yeah. It's like,
of course, Hillary wants to wait and see what the experts have to say.
Yeah, well, I'm a Burning Man. I'm a Burning Man, you know. And, you know, it's like Bob Marley said, legalize it.
I thought that was Peter Tosh.
Was it? Yeah, legalize it, I'll advertise. Well, I saw both of them in concert a long time ago, a couple of decades ago. Man, it's weird when you keep to spread that line out there. So on that, I'm just going to put the line open for somebody else to throw in their 2 cents worth.
All right, sounds good. Jim, good talking to you. Yeah. It was Peter Tosh. Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Nevada, Stan. Okay. Well, the challenge remains on the table, as yet unresponded to. $48.76 waiting around out there to get doubled. 5 at a time, 10 at a time. However, your 5 becomes 10, 10 becomes 20, etc. That's how we keep this going, and that's the only way we keep this going. If I could keep this all going by force of personality, you may rest assured that I would. Indeed. So a little break. Light up the phones if you wish. And this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, we got thorns. We got thorns. Maybe I'll just filibobster the third hour, which would be okay, too. This is Conversation Radio, This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Don't criticize it. Legalize it, yeah, yeah, and I will advertise it. Some call it of instrument too. Legalize it, yeah, yeah, that's the best thing you can do. For the food, good for asthma, good for tuberculosis, even humoral thrombosis. Got to legalize it. Don't criticize it. Legalize it, yeah, yeah. I will advertise it. Birds. Fowls eat it. Goats love to play with it. So you got to legalize it. And don't criticize it.
I remember when playing this at the student radio station at WVU was banned. If you were a volunteer DJ, you could suddenly become a not volunteer DJ anymore for playing Legalize It by Peter Tosh. Mm-hmm. Long distance dedication going out to Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, Peter Tosh, and Legalize It. Experts smoke it. Your husband didn't inhale it. Yeah. Oh, thank you very kindly. Thank you to Philip. Philip just doubled his money, and that leaves in the neighborhood of $30 to go to meet Ron's Unfrozen North Challenge. Thank you very much, Philip. Much obliged.
Going back to the phones in just a second, note coming in from Todd and Kath up in Ohio. Good evening, sir. Sir, where? I work for a living. Old joke. The veterans will get it. Todd says, hope things have been well. Reasonably so. I just wanted to let you know I ran into another gentleman who had the same kind of neck surgery I had, and I think you're looking at. We got to talking, and he also said he wished he hadn't had the surgery. I know we had chatted briefly about this in the past, but I wanted to let you know that you have the right attitude, only when you can't stand it any longer and are walking into walls and so forth. Keep up the good work, my man. Kath and I are listening. We both just hit a wall physically and can't participate like we used to. Well, I hate to hear that. Hope you back away from the wall and can be your merry selves again. Always enjoyed your presence in the chat room, and I've seen Kath in there a little bit. Thank you, Todd. Thank you very kindly. Meanwhile, a note coming in from our dear friend Jude out in the Great Northwest. Oregon pot stores sell more than $11 million in cannabis in the first 5 days. That story dated October 9th, outpacing the early business done in other states that have legalized pot, according to the Oregon Retailers of Cannabis Association. On the first day of legalized sales in Oregon, the sales numbers were around $3.5 million. Wow. Legalize it, tax it, and, well, watch things get better. Let's run over to line one, where I think Jim's waiting. Is that you, Jim?
No, it's my old name, Ganja Dim.
Ah, Ganja Dim, welcome, man, welcome.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about in the old days when we talked about that stirrup pipe that I used to have.
Oh, the electric bong with the stirrups? That will never leave the memory of this program.
Very good. I'm glad it won't. My very, very minor contribution.
Are you kidding? That's legendary. Jim's stirrup bong.
Well, I can tell you one thing. It certainly worked. And
turned on that aquarium pump with the force of the force of a jet engine.
Boy, you have that right. And I don't know, this thing about West Virginia and... You know, why is Obama bothering to come here?
Okay, I'm glad you said it.
It's not going to do any good. All the guy's going to do is risk his life.
Okay, so you agree.
And, you know, why is he coming here? You know, as far as he is concerned, there is no here.
Well, I mean, the White House put out a program that would have provided millions and millions of dollars for trying to retool for a way out and a way up for communities that have been destroyed by the collapse of the coal industry because, you know, we've mined all of it. I don't think he hates us. I think he feels sorry for a lot of us. But remember after Upper Big Branch how he was so gracious that he came to Beckley and repeated the advertising slogan of the West Virginia Coal Association for them? Remember that, Jim?
I do.
I just want to let you know that coal keeps the lights on.
Right. Just like he kept Don Blankenship's lights on. I just wonder how low those lights are burning.
The trial is getting interesting. I've been following as much of it as I can via the press. I'm not going to drive down to the trial or anything. I imagine that's a standing room only crowd.
I'll guarantee you one thing. That son of a bitch will get away with it.
I have a hard time disagreeing with you.
I mean, yeah. I
expect him to walk. And you know, what does he face if he's convicted?
I don't know. Not a whole lot.
I mean, granted, we would not drape the Horn website in black crepe if he died in prison or something.
No. I mean, good Lord. This guy, when I saw his picture on the news this morning, and I watch the news every morning, starting at 5 o'clock, and I just looked at that man and saw the very face of evil, almost demonic, really.
Well, if you look into his eyes, they're dead.
Yeah, they are. They are. They're like something from a horror movie.
And if you ever get within 5 feet of him, you know that you're within 5 feet of a. And I don't throw this term around casually, Jim. But in the case of Don Blankenship, I believe it to be absolutely the truth. If you get within 5 feet of the man, you are within 5 feet of a psychopath, or at the very least, a sociopath.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he could care less about anybody except, you know, his own interests. And, you know, from what I've been able to gather, there are a number of witnesses that are going to try to testify against the emails and types of things, that telephone calls, taped, and whatever. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Don Blankenship is just as bad, if not worse, than John Gotti.
Oh, absolutely! But I got someone who's competing for the crown, Jim. I got this note from our via email from Kilo. Do you recall the name? And she's from Australia, and she's really awful. Gina Reinhart.
It doesn't ring a bell. I'm sorry.
Well, she's a mining magnate, and
okay.
Her net worth is estimated, and of course she inherited a bunch of it. But her net worth is estimated around 19 billion pounds. So that's some real walking around dollars.
Mm-hmm.
She's earned herself a reputation for being quite the miserable human being. Back in 2012, she it was who said that anyone who's jealous of the wealthy needs to spend less time drinking and smoking and socializing and more time whacking so that they'd be successful.
Mm.
And she says there's a class war against poor little her.
Men at work, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich, right.
I say what, sir?
No. I was remembering the line from Men at Work. He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich.
There you go. Absolutely. Well, give me your lowdown on what you saw 2 nights ago, if I may ask.
First of all, the crowd in Beckley was fun. I was tickled with the crowd. I mean, it was for what the political landscape is of Beckley, right?
Yeah. Where were you? Were you here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We were at the Raleigh Playhouse.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't realize they had a public viewing of that.
It was a democratic, come watch the debate kind of thing. I'm a partisan, so I think I freely confess that my views are biased, but I think Bernie won hands down.
Yeah, I think he acquitted himself very well. And, you know, even he was able to give Secretary Clinton a boost up, or was it his way of saying, you know, I'm tired of hearing about things that you should have taken better care of when you were in a position to do so.
I think you can put that interpretation on it, or you can also interpret it as saying, you know, if they quit talking about your emails, Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, there's really not much reason to talk about you. Because all of her policies are just retreads. They're either retreads or they are outright lifts of Bernie's policies. And I'm not trying to offend any any Hillary supporters out there, I will reiterate one more time that if she's the nominee, I'll vote for her, because the idea of casting a vote for T-Rump or Mumbling Ben or Carly Farina or any, you know, God knows, the scion of a criminal enterprise like the Bushes, or Marco Rubio, who hasn't quite yet decided which story of his family's origins he's going to tell, or what religion he's going to be, for that matter.
Oh, well, you know,
they're all mad over there. I mean, Ted Cruz, who is a dead ringer for McCarthy, and you know, Mike Huckabee, who, well, never mind, but you get the idea. There's no way I could vote for one of them. But I'm behind Bernie for one very good reason. For the first time in my political life, when I've been able to vote, I am excited about a realistic prospect of seeing my politics go to the White House.
Well, I hope you're right. But, I mean, this Republican thing is just, you know, a political wheel of fortune. That's all it is.
Oh, it's, well, but by the same token, the debate itself, my first impression is that A, it was not a debate, and B, it was an entertainment. That's why it had commercials in it.
Well, yeah. Exactly,
you know, from Anderson Cooper with his Rick Perry glasses to Jim Webb, who can kill us all with his thumb.
You know, Anderson Cooper, I don't have any problems with Anderson Cooper, but, you know, he was extremely, initially, during the opening phases of that thing, rather harsh. And, you know, to tell you the truth, if I were his superior, I think I would have had a word behind closed doors with him.
Oh, no. His superior gave him a Laurel and Hardy handshake.
Well, I thought he was rude, and, you know, for him to keep reminding people of this, that, and the other, and he was some type of the way it came across to me was he was just some type of minder.
But he was also gatekeeping and dog whistling too, Jim.
You're right.
The moment I recognized that was when he looked at Bernie Sanders and said, "And you took your honeymoon in Moscow." I mean, I would have looked at if I'd been Bernie, and bless his heart, he's got more control than I do. We're gonna red baiting. That's where we're gonna be tonight. Well, that's good. This is gonna be fun.
Well, if I were Bernie, I would have asked Anderson Cooper, "How do you like those truck drivers or those muscle men?"
Well, that would have been a little bit below the belt. And by the way, you know, why should we be surprised at his conduct? Remember, he's a Vanderbilt.
Well, he can't help his origins and all that. But, you know, I have held him in a lot of respect and stuff for going out and doing the stuff he's doing and, you know, all that. But he really pissed me off the other night, the way he handled that thing. He got a little bit softer towards that end, but I don't know. But going back to T-Rump, have you seen the back-to-back ads on CNN with Ivanka?
Oh, I saw one of those.
Do you know how many times they played that today?
What are they advertising?
Her. And she will be a worthy asset to him. She really will be.
I know, but I mean, what is she selling?
Him.
Oh, I mean, those are campaign ads?
Well, what do you think they are? They don't have to say paid for by Donald Trump and with my permission. My God, the woman's his daughter and is a high executive in his hierarchy there. But, I mean, I saw the first one this morning about 6 o'clock or something like that. And then it came on and on and on and on. And I lost count after 6. And these were not short interviews. These were, I mean, it was the biggest infomercial for Donald Trump that he could ever have not paid for. Well, he probably did indirectly, but nonetheless. But, I mean, they had that woman on, and she was, like I say, very polished, very well-mannered, very intelligent, highly intelligent, and a considerably great asset to Donald Trump. I mean, they just kept playing it and playing it and playing it. And you're going to hear it again tomorrow. I guarantee you. They are.
Well, see, the reason Anderson Cooper was the way he was, Jim, is because that's what America thinks real journalism looks and sounds like now. He was combative. He was rough and tough. I mean, my God, where Hillary was concerned, and I hate being cornered into defending Hillary, but dear God, he asked her everything but what she did with the Malaysian jetliner.
I noticed that. I mean, you know, he came across as being a procurator or a Vyshinsky or a Roland Freisler or some type of hanging judge, you know, those people from history, you know. And when that thing started and he was just absolutely rude to people and made the comment, well, you agreed to it as far as the rules of the protocol were concerned.
Yeah.
I don't think that needed to be said, but nonetheless, you know, it's sort of, it took me down. And
well, you know, gone are the days, and I was thinking about this just the other day, Jim. Sometimes I kid around for Barbie's sake, and I do the Walter Cronkite voice. But there was a time when news, when journalism was a thing, if that makes any sense to say, when it was set separate and apart from the idea of being entertaining, and it was serious. I mean, I remember Black and White Meet the Press, when you had really nerdy people sitting in a line putting questions to a person of interest in the day's news, be that person a politician, magnate, whatever. And it was understood to be serious. All the serious is gone. They play at seriousness, but it is quite obviously an entertainment.
Well, it's more than entertainment. It's basically these people are paying obeisance to the people who write their paycheck, and that's exactly what's going on there. I mean, you don't have any people like Fred Friendly and Edward R. Murrow anymore. You just don't. And for those of you who have not seen that movie, Good Night and Good Luck,
yeah,
I would suggest that you see that film.
Yeah, it might be a good refresher course. Or just go, you know, YouTube is a miracle. Go and watch what Meet the Press used to be in black and white. Go find an old Huntley Brinkley Hour newscast.
Right. I remember them well. And there used to be an element of gentility and fact-finding, and now each person, you know, or the interviewer has these certain, I guess, message points that he has to get across. And if it doesn't work one way, he's got a plan B. He's going to try it another to upset or discombobulate the person whom he's interviewing. I mean, they become so vitriolic and just the word I wanted to use for Anderson Cooper was acerbic, rude.
Snotty.
Yeah, and for all of his
background. But you know, I think about the little details of things, Jim. If you consider the way the camera moves around and the way it would pan across the audience and the lit up and the lit up stage and the visuals and everything and Anderson Cooper standing there off to one side and it would come to him and you know that's those are the production values of a beauty pageant.
Yeah, or a bad kabuki theater.
But I mean, no, really, a beauty pageant. If you think back to the stage setup of Miss America, Miss Universe, America's Junior Miss, where the you come back from break and the MC is standing there in his tux and no, it was a beauty pageant.
Like, Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to also get away from the fact that this was, again, allegedly the Democratic debate. When no less than three out, wait, one, two, yeah, no less than three out of the five people on that stage were former Republicans. Jim Webb.
Oh, yeah.
Lincoln Chafee.
Mm-hmm.
And the Goldwater girl herself, Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton.
That's true. Absolutely. And that thing about, well, I told Wall Street, they ought not to do that. I mean, I just wonder what type of ruler she was wrapping their knuckles with. They did it.
Well, and the other thing that's particularly interesting coming out of it, and the fact that we're still talking about it, means that, you know, there was some interest. All the for-profit media outlets fell all over themselves after it was over to declare Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton the winner.
I know it.
And yet, poll after online poll, focus group after focus group, it wasn't even close. Bernie, 83%. Bernie, 76%. Bernie, 91%.
Mm-hmm.
Actual people thought Bernie was the winner. But Time Warner, who owns CNN and who has given millions of dollars to Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, declared her the clear winner.
Well, you know, she's quite good at debate, and she did acquit herself pretty well, too. She did. I mean, you know, it was slick, it was polished. It was the best that Madison Avenue could offer, that's for sure.
And also, I will add this in, to get to work in our obligatory evening Star Trek reference. My wife, not me, Agnes, not me, so I'm not going to stand for any accusations of misogyny or sexism. My wife looked at Dr. Senator Secretary and Secretary Clinton and just leaned over and whispered to me, who got her the Starfleet Ambassador uniform for tonight?
Well, vertical stripes do very nicely, light vertical stripes. But you'll notice on the east, the right, and the left, they were rather slimming, were they not?
Well, they were. And by the way, what was the necessity of the potty remark? I know. I'm simple. I'm shallow. But really, we're talking about the fate of the world. Why did we need a potty remark?
That one I don't remember. Enthrall me with your acumen.
Well, they came back from break, and Anderson said something cute like, well, it's see you made it all back, and Secretary Clinton said, well, it does take me a little longer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wondered about that, too. I thought to myself, dear God. Oh, Lord have mercy. As far as I'm concerned, the whole thing was just nothing but a Charlie Foxtrot, and Bernie Sanders was the one who at least was able to come out not smelling like you know what, to tell you the truth. One thing I want to mention, and there's and I do have cable, and I watch it a lot. There's a channel there called Pivot, and they had an excellent documentary about the Wall Street people and what they had done that led up to the 2008, 2009, and the stuff they'd done, these corporate executives had done and gotten away with just millions of dollars at the taxpayer expense. And, you know, you've got guys in there or people in there in prison for having a little bit of ganja. And these people stole these executives and Wall Streeters, you know, particularly ever since they did away with Glass-Steagall and deregulated the whole thing, that got off scot-free. And we paid for it. I paid for it. And it was it was called Insider something. I can't remember the title. It came on very early last Sunday morning. And it was a definitive documentary about how these people just got away with, oh God, the misery and the horror that they caused people. The foreclosures and all the stuff and the deregulation. And basically what they considered the deregulation, you know, before Glass-Steagall, for example, that was in effect. You had a ship with a financial ship with compartments, okay? And after that, and what they did to negate the effects of that, they took out all the watertight doors. So the whole thing would just wallow and founder. I wish I could remember a lot more about the program, but it was real early, and I just happened to flip on, because I always watch CBS Sunday morning, and it comes on at 9, but nonetheless, it was an excellent program, and this pivot channel on Suddenlink, I'm not trying to plug the Marine thing, but if you can find it, they do have some good documentaries about things that will bring people to account. Not actually, but at least verbally, and they will surface issues that people, these people on Wall Street, would not like to hear. And I'm just wondering how long it's going to last.
Well, I mean, and that comes back to that remark that I mentioned as being an action of the goddess of irony. You know, Hillary was Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton was very, very proud to announce that she had been the senator for Wall Street, and in 2007 she said. And they were foreclosing on all these people, and I said, now cut that out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was 2007. The crash was in 2008. It seems pretty clear to me that they didn't cut that out. And even later, by 2012, I'm sitting in the general meeting, the general annual meeting of one of the big banks up in Charlotte, and they're talking about the fact that they're still out there with a monstrous foreclosure problem. I mean, there are more foreclosed, empty homes in this country now than there are homeless people, I think.
Yeah, there are. I think that's Bank of America, wasn't it?
Yeah, Bank of America, exactly. Thank you, Jim.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. It just seems as though there are.
I just don't think, now cut that out, is going to rein in the excesses of Wall Street and the investment banks.
I found it absolutely insulting for her to have said that. Now, you cut that out like they were in her class and she was a schoolmarm with a long ruler or a nun in a parochial school. That's exactly what it came across to me. It really pissed me off.
Well, it did me too. And if you bring it up, because I have, and I've caught some hell for it, if you bring it up, well, yet you know, she just meant that she was from the senator from New York. I mean, that's what she said. I was the senator from New York. I was the senator for Wall Street. Can't you understand that?
Well, yeah.
And my only response, Jim, is can't you understand Freudian slip?
Yeah, and definitely hers for showing that night, in spite of her. Couture. That, as far as I'm concerned, when she said that, her panties fell right down on her ankles.
Fortunately, we weren't. The CNN was not broadcasting the long shot.
Well, I don't know if they had a lot of. I shouldn't say this. If they had a lot of fans going up there, she might have. Taken off like Mary Poppins, who knows? But I mean, I found some of those remarks and the way it was conducted downright just plain offensive. But I'll tell you, going back to this Ivanka Trump thing and Donald Trump, I mean, people have laughed at him, made fun of him, and said this, that, and that about him, but this man is very serious, and I really believe that he could be their next Republican nominee. I do believe he can, and I do believe he will, because, you know, he's got a very well-oiled machine. that is subject to no scrutiny because it's all in his own money. And now he's going to have his, you know, this thing with Ivanka. I mean, why do you think that CNN did that interview with her 6 times today?
Well, it's... And of course, did you see the news? He's going to, what is it, November 7th, he's going to host Saturday Night Live?
Well, you know, the guy has a television presence. In his own way, he is somewhat telegenic. And he is appealing to those people who hate what's going on in the Forbidden City.
And of course, you with your considerable historic perspective will appreciate this. Trump had an event, I think yesterday, in Virginia. And a handful of undocumented immigrants showed up to protest. And they tried to do to Trump a sort of faint impression of what Black Lives Matter did to Bernie Sanders. And his followers screamed at them and eventually began spitting on the immigrants, and it eventually came to blows.
I don't doubt that. And as far as his wall is concerned, I mean, you know, I think he could come up with a better analogy than that or whatever, because walls don't stop people. My God in heaven.
And
yeah, was he going to build another Atlantic Wall like Hitler did in France? I mean, come on. It's like Patton said, anything man can build, nature can overcome. So you don't stop.
Well, I don't think of the Atlantic so much as I do the Atlantic Wall so much as I do the Great Wall of China.
Same difference.
They completed that, and by God, they were. And then all the people on the outside did was bribe the gatekeeper and get the key and walk through.
Well, that's basically it. I mean, fixed defenses simply don't work in a static environment of warfare, be it political, military, or whatever. It just doesn't work. But nonetheless, this man is very serious, and he really wants that office. Because he's an extreme egotist. I mean, he's highly egotistical, extremely vulnerable to any type of criticism, and I would just hate to think of him having his finger on that nuclear trigger. That's for sure.
And that remains the burning question: will he stay in it?
He's in it for the long haul. You know, I believe him when he says that. I mean, this isn't any type of reality show for him. This is real.
This is the ultimate this is the ultimate power aphrodisiac.
Precisely.
And so you don't think Jebbia can overtake him because he's the serious candidate?
Jebbia has the presence and the appeal of a dial tone.
Well, that's true, and he's apparently got the Bush ineptitude gene, but he's supposed to be the serious candidate of the you know, the establishment.
Maybe so, and maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't think at this point, and it's a year off now. But the guy has no telegenic presence. He has no real program for anything. He has compassion for people less fortunate than he, as Adolf Hitler did for the Jews. And as far as I'm concerned, he's just one more Bush. And God, we've had, well, the first one wasn't quite as bad. The second one was absolutely horrible. We don't need another one.
No, but so if you're a betting man, Jim, you're on the phone to Harris in Reno, and you're putting down a thin on Trump for the nomination.
Yeah, I am right now. Yeah, absolutely. Unless something, you know, catastrophic happens or whatever.
So what? So what would, I mean, short of shuffling off this mortal coil, what do you think would get him to step out?
To tell you the truth, I don't know, because I can't see any reason why he would. I really don't. I mean, you know, unless it were something beyond his control. Unless he were to have a stroke or something like that, or get so angry that he would just fall down on the stage, or really say something terribly outrageous or whatever. And I think he already has done that, so we can count that out. I mean, he has gone on with a type of monologue that appeals to a lot of people in this country. Well, if he can do what he did for business, what can he do to straighten out the people inside the Beltway? The thing about it is, as far as I know, he's taking it all on his own dime.
Although, I think he is soliciting donations.
Oh, I don't know about that. I haven't heard anything about soliciting donations. He's, what I've heard him say is, now, whether you believe it or not, I mean, I put as much faith in that as I would Hitler's tax returns, but nonetheless, you know, I just think that what I've heard, what they're letting it be known, that he is turning down these donations. And, you know, or at least he's not openly soliciting them. Or, as far as my limited knowledge is concerned, covertly soliciting them, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. The guy is pretty serious, and he really wants that job because it will be the penultimate crown in his empire. And so there it is, and there you have it. But like I say, I just wonder exactly why he... or why they ran 6 ads of Ivanka, and probably have run more in the afternoon. And
but God, I see a picture of Ivanka, and all I can hear is T. Rump's voice saying, "Yeah, she's beautiful. You know, if she wasn't my daughter, I'd probably hit on her." I mean, ew.
No, you need to listen to these interviews and see how I've got to have to give her credit. She's the best thing that's happened to him ever on those interviews. I mean, just extremely well-polished, extremely well-bred, genteel, well-spoken, and wasn't using any type of, rhetoric or whatever. And they were extremely kind to her. And I'm sure that was agreed upon before she would come on the air. But nonetheless, people pay attention to that kind of stuff. She's one of his best showmen. That's for sure. And other than that, the only thing I can say is let somebody else get on here. And you have a good night. And... again, I want to thank you for a couple of weeks ago playing that song for
Shady.
A lost member of my household, the Shady Lady, and that's about it.
Well, is Rupert doing okay?
Rufus is doing okay. He's being Rufus, and he's still looking for her.
Bless his heart. Well, Jim, take care and have a good evening, and I hope we talk soon.
All right, sir. Good night.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Jim from over Beckley Way, about 22 minutes before the hour, and a note coming in from Philip. I didn't realize you didn't know this, Philip. Philip said, "I just learned from your caller, Jim, in Nevadistan, that Mr. Stress is no longer with us and have made a small donation in his honor." And that's what got doubled by Ron. Thank you, Philip. Thank you. Philip says, "I will miss him greatly. For me, he was the Studs Terkel of the horn, great stories and real experiences that I enjoyed.
I was wondering why I hadn't called to comment on the conversation on drugs. I would have enjoyed his remarks greatly. Well, when I and you know what, Philip, when I saw the story break about President Obama coming here and the fact that it's pills and heroin, yeah, one of the first things that happened was I heard Mr. Stress in my head saying, I always figured that if geniuses Miles Davis couldn't handle it, or Billie Holiday couldn't handle it, I probably didn't have any business trying it. Honest to God, it was one of the first things I thought of. Philip continues, I can only speak from my own perspective, but to me the drug issue is one of demand and why so many of our fellow citizens feel compelled to tune out. I write this as someone, the last in my neighborhood, who began smoking herb at 15 and stopped at 33. The fact that you just called it herb, Philip, I think tells us a little bit about your demographic there. But for the occasional medicinal herb my daughter buys me. As a person with multiple chronic illnesses, all based on the immune system trying to destroy itself, I've been prescribed Vicodin, Furanol, and promethazine for the 25 years and take either narcotic and the anti-nausea medication daily. I've found that marijuana is the most effective painkiller available for my condition, but have no legal access to it, so I avoid it. It was also the medication recommended for alleviation of the side effects of my mother's chemotherapy by her oncologists in 1987. It was illegal, and they advised her to get it in from one of her children. It worked well, but she stopped using it because she spent the day eating snacks, watching television, and neglected housework, and considered herself unproductive. My own drug lecture to all three of my daughters began by asking them what they had been taught in school and informing them that it was crap. I explained that people begin using drugs because they are enjoyable, but the question my daughters had to ask themselves is what they wanted to accomplish with their lives and whether they wanted regular use of drugs, including alcohol, to be an impediment. I cited my own experiences when I smoked too much herb and my marks in my junior year of high school tanked, and the experiences of my friends, some of whom could have achieved so much more in their lives had they not been unable to control their intake of drugs. I informed them that I would understand if they were tempted to experiment or occasionally use drugs, including alcohol, but I believed in their promise and didn't want them to make the same mistake of using too often and too much that I and my friend did. I am happy to report that only one has smoked herb, and I have been able to detect it each time, and two of the three eschew alcohol altogether, while the third drinks socially. When I speak with other parents, they are dumbfounded by my candor, but you and I are of the generation that was fed propaganda about drugs that we discovered to be deliberately false, and speaking for myself, I placed no faith in government and law enforcement experts when they subsequently warned of the problems herb and other drugs would create, if not banned. I believe that until we address our seemingly inexhaustible desire for excessive use of various substances to avoid the reality of our lives and the problems inherent in our culture, discussion of a drug war and efforts in Colombia, Mexico, Afghanistan, and other countries is futile. Don't get me wrong. I have no problem with occasional use, but that is not what is ailing this country with respect to drugs. That being said, I'm going to need a whole lot more of my prescription narcotics and herb if I find myself having to vote for the war hawk and political contortionist masquerading as a progressive. Sadly, I'll donate and vote for Sanders in the primary, but suspect that the only presidential candidate who has shared many of my views will not be the Democratic nominee. Even worse, I'm too old to learn Swedish and live so far away from my children. So here's to you and the folks who make the horn what it is, for providing a balm to get through these days. As for me, I'm adopting Hillary's line. I want to be saved from destroying myself and consequently look for a huge infusion of cash from Wall Street to achieve my goal. I urge anyone who thinks Hillary's for us folks to look at her vote on the bankruptcy reform bill. My youngest daughter heard her shtick and was appalled by her "if you work hard enough, you'll get through college" statements. I wonder how much Chelsea still owes on college loans. Be well, Philip. Man, I love notes like that. Yeah, that response to the idea of free college tuition for the nation. Saying, well, you know, you just need to work harder. Yeah, it didn't play with me either. Philip also asks regarding Saturday Night Trump, does anybody else think that NBC's cancellation of The Apprentice because of Trump's racist remarks is a tad disingenuous and has more to do with salary and rating issues given the spot it's giving him tomorrow on Saturday Night Live? Where's the equal time rule when we need it? Dead and buried, right next to Ronald Reagan. Yes, indeed. So, 16 minutes before the hour, and yes, there is about $30 to go, a little more than $30 to go in Ron's Unfrozen North Challenge to go alongside Phillip's kind effort in memory of Mr. Stress. Speaking of working hard enough, and this being Thorn in the Side Thursday and everything, by the way, 8:31 p.m. Damn it, Gerald, triple Hitler points. How did you do it? This being Thorn in the Side Thursday, and speaking of those slackers who aren't working hard enough, we haven't heard from Andrea Tarantula in a while over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. A discussion by extremely well-coughed, expertly made-up, exquisitely coutured women and one misogynist or just creepy guy. Let's check in, because, see, apparently a group in New York City called Union Square Hospitality Group, led by their CEO, Danny Meyer, made an announcement. At all of that company's restaurants, largely in New York City, tipping will be banned inside of a year. CEO Danny Meyer explained, "We believe hospitality is a team sport, and that it takes an entire team to provide you with the experiences you have come to expect from us. Unfortunately, many of our colleagues, our cooks, reservationists, and dishwashers, to name a few, aren't able to share in our guests' generosity, even though their contributions are just as vital to the outcome of your experience at one of our restaurants. Once these changes are implemented, the total cost you pay to dine with us won't differ much from what you pay now. But for our teams, the change will be significant. We will now have the ability to compensate all of our employees equitably, competitively, and professionally. This will, if it works, this will rock the restaurant industry." And, of course, I remember having it explained to me in Europe 3 years ago. You don't have to tip here. All these people are fairly compensated. They have a living wage. You only tip if the service is truly outstanding. Mm-hmm. So, because working people can't be trusted to work their asses off unless they're starving, well, the following conversation ensued over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Let's check in, shall we?
Big change coming to some of New York City's top restaurants that could have a major change on dining far beyond this city. Danny Meyer, the restaurant impresario behind the very popular Shake Shack burger empire, saying he's going to eliminate tipping at all 13 of his full-service dining establishments in the Big Apple, which includes some high-profile restaurants. Many of them Harris has eaten at, according to one industry. I'm just joking.
I do love fries.
One industry observer saying this is the first time zero gratuity will be the universal policy for a major American restaurant group. Of course, this means higher wages for servers and higher menu prices for you. Meyer saying he's doing this to remain competitive. All right. I have a lot of chef friends at the James Beard award winning level.
Oh, well, then they're not working for $9 an hour. just saying there, Ms. Smith. Just saying. By the way, this is that ignorant program called Outnumbered, where there's four women and one guy in the middle, who in this case happens to be Jesse Waters. And isn't he Bill O'Reilly's stalker? Yeah. Wasn't he the guy who tried to lay hands on Bernie Sanders? Yes, he was.
Everybody's talking about this, but it's not just the chefs and the restaurant chains talking about this. At the consumer level, we will face higher prices. I mean, this is just his restaurant chain starting. What do you think about this?
I like being able to slap down a fat tip to impress the waitress. Don't take that away from me. I like to be able to show off a little bit. But I mean, listen, when you go to Europe, the service is terrible because there's no tipping and they don't have any motivation to hustle.
Yeah, Jesse, when you go to Europe, maybe the service is terrible because you're a prick. Because you are. You got that? He doesn't want people to make a living wage in Danny Meyer's restaurants because he tries to impress women's by being a big tipper. I'll bet you he uses Jefferson $2 bills in the strip joint in the little garter strap instead of ones, yeah. Hey, baby, I'm a big tipper. Come here.
This is a good point.
I never thought about it that way.
Yeah. Oh. You work for tips.
Jesse's like waving a five around. He's like, hey, you know what? This could all be yours for the rate of like a strip club.
Yeah. Oh, look, they went there too, and they work with him.
20.
Keep it coming.
You know what? I do have a problem with raising the prices. You and I just yesterday were talking about Walmart.
And by the way, Gerald just pointed this out. This is a manifestation of the stupidity that I don't know, they must pump it in like oxygen into the gaming floor in Vegas. They must just pump the stupid into the set at Fox News. Nobody's telling Jesse Waters that he can't tip. It's just that the workers are going to earn a living wage. You know, the reason for tipping is because minimum wage requirements in this country say that you do not have to pay, like, a server in a restaurant minimum wage if they can recoup it in tips. And, you know, it was kind of funny. I was talking to a restaurant server the other day. Really, I was. And she was talking about having to work on Sunday afternoons. She said, I hate it. She said, because that's when all the church people come in. And they are the worst tippers on earth. I don't think there's even any competition like between the Methodists and the Baptists and the Presbyterians. They are all just uniformly awful tippers. Yeah, because they just gave all their tips to Jesus. Anyway, back to the gang. Because, you know, those $2.10 an hour servers, they're not gonna hustle for Jesse Waters' $5 damn bill if they're getting a living wage.
How they're hurting because they've raised their prices. I mean, look at what's going on with them. Not their prices, but their wages. And then in order to pay for that, they've got to raise prices. So if the food is fabulous, but the service is awful, I'm not going there.
Yeah.
I'm not going there. So you're going to raise your prices, but you're going to lose
me. You're talking about, Andrea, restaurants like Modern.
Notice how the default assumption here is that someone who isn't desperate won't work hard enough. See, boom, this is another one of those moments. This is another capitalism in a nutshell moment. The beatings will continue until morale improves. It's funny when it's on a T-shirt that you buy in the Caribbean, right? You know, with the little skull and crossbones and St. Croix written over on the... Right. But as a real working economic theory, it sucks. And it also opens the door to let people abuse working people. Like the asshole who'll leave a $2 tip in 200 pennies. They exist. Oh, yes, they exist. But you're gonna lose, what's her name here? Sandra Smith or what? She's fabulously blonde. Immaculately coiffed. You're going to lose her because if your food's great and your service sucks, you lose me. Well, it's not like the serving staff is changing. They're just going to be better, not fairly, but better compensated. And it probably will not add a buck to the cost of a burger. Oh dear, it's going to add $2? Well, the outnumbered gang will go somewhere else because they can't afford that, you know, Rupert and his Saudi buddy being such tightwads like they are. You know, this assumption that all the servers just suck unless they're being treated like bond servants. Well, Republicans, what do you want?
Which is the restaurant mm-hmm. in the Museum of Modern Art, which mm-hmm. Danny Meyer, I mean, he revolutionized museum dining. Yeah. I mean, he really did. Yeah. He's also got Gramercy Tavern, among other fancy restaurants.
Some of the best restaurants yeah. in New York City. So as much as I want to believe...
This, by the way, is Andrea Tarantula. Remember her? Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice like the Black Panthers. Yeah. I want to back up and make sure we get all of her.
Nice. Museum dining. Yeah. I mean, he really did. Yeah. He's also got Gramercy Tavern, among other fancy restaurants.
Some of the best restaurants yeah. in New York City. So as much as I want to believe that the service will slide, he'll probably keep an eye on it. Although that's the biggest concern. If this bleeds mm-hmm. outside of, say, the restaurant chain of Danny Meyer, I agree with Jesse.
Smaller
as someone who grew up in the restaurant business, my parents, they own a number of restaurants.
See? Grew up in the restaurant business, my parents owned a number of restaurants, which is a far cry from I grew up in the restaurant business, my parents were servers making $2 an hour, or my parents were line cooks making $7. But Andrea Tarantula grew up in the restaurant business. And notice the fact that she can't describe, she has to go to some sort of physically harmful analogy in order to and if this bleeds out of New York City, bleeds? Really? People making a living wage is bleeding?
If you take away that incentive to work your tail off and everybody's just getting that flat wage, you're not going to see the servers hustle. I mean, that was why we moved. Well, my dad was also screaming at me from the kitchen, but that was why we were motivated
to his voice,
to move.
Please, I love his voice.
You know.
Yeah, okay. But you weren't raising a family on that wage, were you, Andrea Tarantula? Oh, as a matter of fact, you weren't. God almighty.
No, he'd move it, you know, if he would be talking, move it faster, go, you know, and that's not going to be there. Why, if you're all going to get the same amount of money?
Well, so Danny Meyer, to be clear, says that he's doing this for several different reasons, but one of which, and the first one he mentioned in the press release, he was doing this to attract top talent. He said that there's a big problem in the city with lack of tipping. The Europeans are one of the big complaints that they don't understand that we do tip and reward good service in this country. He's had people who have left, waiters who have left crying because they had a big meal and a big customer and got tipped nothing. So he's doing that to protect his workers.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah, you know, I don't work for a living. You know, I just go around, like, stalking people that Bill O'Reilly tells me to go and stalk. I don't know if I buy that.
Something tells me that Meyer is going to make a lot more money in this policy. I mean, I don't think this guy's doing this out of the benefit to help the wait staff. I feel like this is going to help the bottom line.
No. He said he's going to lose about $1 million to $1.2 million, I think, a year because of this, because apparently of some tax
loophole. But he's a bad businessman.
Well, but I think he's doing this, he said, because the back staff, the staff in the kitchen, is making virtually nothing, whereas the waitresses are all raking in the money from the tips.
But he said he will have to raise menu prices. Yep.
Heaven forfend. And by the way, the folks working in the back kitchen, if you know the restaurant, anything about the restaurant business in New York, you know who those people are. Yeah. And oddly enough, Danny Meyer is not going to go on beans and rice. As Irish Dave notes, applying that practice to CEOs would mean paying them more and eliminating their bonuses or bonies. Bony. Boni. Yeah. So there we are. Time to get out of here. We're right up against it. Right on top of it. Thanks, Philip, for jumping back in. That means we got about $15 to go to... finish off Ron's Unfrozen North Challenge. Thank you very kindly, and thanks very much to Harold for have a show on me. We are very close to being out of the hole as we go into Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow evening. I hope you'll all gather around for the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thanks, everyone, for your time, for listening. Thanks for your participation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.